Friday night, I went to see Bianca, the vampress. I didn't just leap out of bed and go see her, of course. You don't go walking into the proverbial lion's den lightly. You start with a good breakfast. My breakfast took place around 3 in the afternoon when I woke up to hear my phone ringing. I had to get out of bed and pad into the main room to answer it. I grumbled. Dresden, Murphy said. What can you tell me? Murphy sounded stressed. Her voice had that distinct edge that she got whenever she was nervous, and it rankled me, like fingernails scraping on bones. The investigation into Tommy Tom's murder must not be going well. Nothing yet, I said. Then I lied to her a little. I was up most of the night working, but nothing showed yet. She answered me with a swear word. That's not good enough, Harry. I need answers, and I need them yesterday. I'll get to it as quick as I can. Get to it faster, she snarled. She was angry. Not that this was unusual for Murphy, but it told me that something else was going on. Some people panic when things get rough, harried. Some people fall apart. Murphy got pissed. Commissioner's riding your back again? City Police Commissioner Howard Fairweather used Murphy and her team as scapegoats for all sorts of unsolvable crimes that he had dumped into her lap. Fairweather was always lurking around, trying for an opportunity to make Murphy look bad, as though by doing so, he would avoid being crucified himself. Like a winged monkey from the Wizard of Oz. Kind of makes you wonder who's leaning on him to get things done. Her voice was sour as ripe lemons. I heard her drop an Alka-Seltzer into a glass of liquid. I'm serious, Harry. You get me those answers I need, and you get them fast. I need to know if this was sorcery, and if so, how it was done, and who could have done it. Names, places, I need to know everything. It isn't that simple, then make it simple. How long before you can tell me? I need an estimate for the commissioner's investigative committee in 15 minutes, or I might as well turn in my badge today. I grimaced. If I was able to get something out of Bianca, I might be able to help Murph on the investigation. But if it proved fruitless, I was going to have to spend the entire evening doing nothing productive. And Murphy needed her answers now. Maybe I should have made a stay-awake potion. Does the committee work weekends? Murphy snorted. Are you kidding? We'll have something by Monday, then. You can have it figured out by then? She asked. I don't know how much good it'll do you, even if I can puzzle it out. I hope you've got more to go on than this. I heard her sigh into the phone and drink the fizzy drink. Don't let me down, Harry. Time to change the subject before she pinned me down and smelled me lying. I had no intention of doing the forbidden research if I could find a way out of doing it. No luck with Bianca? Another swear word. That bitch won't talk to us. Just smiles and nods and blows smoke, makes small talk, and crosses her legs. You should have seen Carmichael drooling. Well, tough to blame him, maybe. I hear she's cute. Listen, Murph, what if I just... No, Harry, absolutely not. You will not go over to the Velvet Room. You will not talk to that woman. You will not get involved in this. Lieutenant Murphy, I drawled, a little jealous, are we? Don't flatter yourself. You're a civilian, Dresden. Even if you do have your investigator's license, if you get your ass laid out in the hospital or the morgue, it'll be me that suffers for it. Murph, I'm touched. I'll touch your head to a brick wall a few times if you cross me on this, Harry. Her voice was sharp, vehement. Hey, wind down, Murph. If you don't want me to go, no problem. Whoops, a lie. She'd be all over that like a troll on a billy goat. You're a lousy liar, Harry. God damn it, I gotta take you down to lock up just to keep you from... What? I said loudly into the receiver. Murph, you're breaking up. I can't hear you. Damn phone again. Call me back. Then I hung up on her. Mister padded over to me and batted at my leg. He watched me with serious green eyes as I leaned down and unplugged the phone as it started to ring again. Okay, mister. You hungry? I got us breakfast. Leftover steak sandwich for him. SpaghettiOs heated up on my wood stove for me. I rationed out my last can of Coke, which Mr. craves at least as badly as I do, and by the time I was done eating and drinking and petting, I was awake and thinking again, and getting ready for sundown. Daylight savings time hadn't cut it yet. The dark would fall around 6. I had about 2 hours to get set to go. You might think you know a thing or two about vampires. Maybe some of the stuff you've heard is accurate. Likely it's not. Either way, I wasn't looking forward to the prospect of going into Bianca's lair to demand information from her. I was going to assume that things were going to get ugly before all was said and done, just to make sure I didn't get caught with my staff down. Wizardry is all about thinking ahead, about being prepared. Wizards aren't really superhuman. We just have a leg up on seeing things more clearly than other people, and being able to use the extra information we have for our benefit. Hell, the word wizard comes from the same root as wise. We know things. We aren't any stronger or faster than anyone else. We don't even have all that much more going on in the mental department. But we're god-awful sneaky, and if we get the chance to get set for something, we can do some impressive things. As a wizard, if you're ready to address a problem, then it's likely that you'll be able to come up with something that will let you deal with it. So I got together all the things I thought I might need. I made sure my cane was polished and ready. I put my silver knife in a sheath that hung just under my left arm. I put the escape potion in its plastic squeeze bottle into my duster's pocket. I put on my favorite talisman, a silver pentacle on a silver chain. It had been my mother's. My father had passed it down to me. And I put a small, folded piece of white cloth into my pocket. I had several enchanted items around, or half-enchanted items, anyway. Carrying out a full enchantment is expensive and time-consuming, and I just couldn't afford to do it very much. We blue-collar wizards just have to sling out a few spells where we can and hope they don't go stale at the wrong time. I would have been a lot more comfortable if I'd been carrying my blasting rod or my staff, but that would look like showing up at Bianca's door in a tank, walking in carrying a machine gun and a flamethrower while announcing my intention to fight. I had to maintain a fine balance between going in ready for trouble and going in asking for trouble. Not that I was afraid, mind you. I didn't think Bianca would be willing to cause problems for a mortal wizard. Bianca wouldn't want to piss off the White Council by messing with me. On the other hand, I wasn't exactly the White Council's favorite guy. They might even look the other way if Bianca decided to take me quietly out of the picture. Careful, Harry, I warned myself. Don't get paranoid. If you get like that, you'll be building your little apartment into the basement of solitude. What do you think? I asked Mister, once I was decked out in what paraphernalia I was willing to carry. Mister went to the door and batted at it insistently. Everyone's a critic. Fine, fine, I sighed. I let him out, then I went out, got into my car, and drove down to the Velvet Room in its expensive lakeside location. Bianca runs her business out of an old huge mansion from the early days of the Roaring Twenties. Rumor has it that the infamous Al Capone had built it for one of his mistresses. There was a gate with an iron fence and a security guard. I pulled the Beetle up to the little swath of driveway that began at the street and ended at the fence. There was a hiccuping rattle from the back of the engine as I brought the machine to a halt. I rolled down the window and stuck my head out, peering back. Something went whoom, and then black smoke poured out from the bottom of the car and scuttled down the slope of the drive and into the street. I winced. The engine gave an almost apologetic rattle and shuddered to its death. Great. Now I had no ride home. I got out of the Beetle and stood mourning it for a moment. The security guard on the other side of the gate was a blocky man, not overly tall, but overly muscled, and hiding it under an expensive suit. He studied me with attack dog eyes, and then said through the gate, "Do you have an appointment?" "No," I told him, "but I think Bianca will want to see me." He looked at me unimpressed. "I'm sorry," he said. "Bianca's out for the evening." Things are never simple anymore. I shrugged at him, folded my arms, and leaned on the hood of the Beetle. "Suit yourself. I'll just stay until a tow truck comes by then, until I can get this thing out of the drive for you." He stared at me, his eyes narrowed down to tiny slits with the effort of thinking. Eventually, the thoughts got to his brain, got processed, and sent back out with a message to pass the buck. "I'll call your name in," he said. "Good man," I approved. "You won't be sorry." "Name," he growled. "Harry Dresden." If he recognized my name and didn't show on his face, he glared at me and the Beetle and walked off a few paces, lifting a cellular phone from his pocket and to his ear. I listened. Listening isn't hard to do. No one has practice at it nowadays, but you can train yourself to pay attention to your senses, if you work at it long enough. I got a guy down here that says that Bianca will want to talk to him, the guard said. Says his name is Harry Dresden. He was silent for a moment. I couldn't quite make out the buzz of the other voice, other than it was a female. Mm-hmm, he said. He glanced back at me. Mm-hmm, he said again. Sure, sure I will. Of course, ma'am. I reached in through the window of the Beetle and got out my cane. I rested it on the concrete beside my boots and tapped it a few times, as though impatient. The guard turned back to me, leaned over to one side, and pushed a button somewhere. The gate buzzed and clicked open. Come on in, Mr. Dresden, he said. I can have someone come and tow your car if you like. Super, I told him. I gave him the name of the wrecker Mike has to deal with, and told him to tell the guy that it was Harry's car again. Fido, the guard, dutifully noted this down, writing on a small notebook he drew from a pocket. While he did, I walked past him toward the house, clicking my cane on the concrete with every pace. Stop, he told me, his voice calm and confident. People don't speak with that kind of absolute authority unless they have a gun in their hands. I stopped. Put the cane down, he told me, and put your arms up. You ought to be searched before you were allowed inside. I sighed. I did what he said, and let him pat me down. I didn't turn around to face him, but I could smell the metal of his gun. He found the knife and took it. His fingers brushed the nape of my neck, felt the chain there. What's this? He said. Pentacle, I told him. Let me see it. Use one hand. I used my left hand to draw it out of my shirt and show it to him. A silver five-pointed star within a circle, all smooth geometry. He grunted and said, fine. The search went on, and he found the plastic squeeze bottle. He took it out of my pocket, opened it, and sniffed at it. What's this? A health cola, I said. Smells like shit, he said. Capped it and put it back in my pocket. What about my cane? Returned when you leave, he said. Damn. My knife and my cane had been my only physical lines of defense. Anything else I did would have to rely wholly upon magic, and that would be dicey on the best of days. It was enough to rattle me. Of course, Fido the guard had missed a couple of things. First, he'd overlooked the clean white handkerchief in my pocket. Second, he'd passed me on with my pentacle still upon my neck. He probably figured that since it wasn't a crucifix or even a cross, that I couldn't use it to keep Bianca away from me. Which wasn't true. Vampires, and other such creatures, don't respond to symbols as such. They respond to the power that accompanies an act of faith. I couldn't ward off a vampire mosquito with my faith in the Almighty. He and I just never seemed to connect. But the pentacle was a symbol of magic itself, and I had plenty of faith in that. And, of course, Fido had overlooked my getaway potion. Bianca really ought to trust her guards with more awareness of the supernatural and what sort of things to look for. The house itself was elegant, very roomy, with the high ceilings and the broad floors that they just don't make anymore. A well-groomed young woman with a short, straight haircut greeted me in an enormous entry hall. I was passing polite to her, and she showed me to the library, its walls lined with old books in leather bindings, similar to the leather-cushioned chairs around the enormous old dogfoot table in the room's center. I took a seat and waited, and waited, and waited. More than a half an hour went by before Bianca finally arrived. She came into the room like a candle burning with a cold, clear flame. Her hair was a burnished shade of auburn that was too dark to cast any ruddy highlights, but it did anyway. Her eyes were dark, clear, her complexion flawlessly smooth and elegantly graced with cosmetics. She was not a tall woman, but was shapely, wearing a black dress with a plunging neckline and a slash to one side that showed off a generous portion of pale thigh. Black gloves covered her hands to above the elbows, and her $300 shoes were a study in high-heeled torture devices. She looked too good to be true. Mr. Dresden, she greeted me, this is an unexpected pleasure. I rose when she entered the room. Madame Bianca, I replied, nodding to her. We meet at last. Hearsay neglected to mention how lovely you are. She laughed, lips shaped the sounds, head falling back just enough to show a flash of pale throat. A gentleman, they said. I see they were correct. It is a charmingly passé thing to be a gentleman in this country. You and I are of another world, I said. She approached me and extended her hand, a motion oozing feminine grace. I bowed over her hand briefly, taking it and brushing my lips against the back of her glove. Do you really think I'm beautiful, Mr. Dresden? She asked me. As lovely as a star, madam. Polite and a pretty one, too, she murmured. Her eyes flickered over me from head to toe, but even she avoided meeting gazes with me. Whether from a desire to avoid inadvertently directing her power at me or being on the receiving end of mine, I couldn't tell. She continued into the room and stopped beside one of the comfortable chairs. As a matter of course, I stepped around the table and drew out the chair for her, seating her. She crossed her legs in that dress, in those shoes, and made it look good. I blinked for just a moment, then returned to my seat. So, Mr. Dresden, what brings you to my humble house? Care for an evening of entertainment? I quite assure you that you will never have another experience like it. She placed her hands in her lap, smiling at me. I smiled at her and put one hand into my pocket onto the white handkerchief. No, thank you. I came to talk. Her lips parted a silent. Ah, I see. About what, if I might ask? About Jennifer Stanton and her murder. I had all of a second's warning. Bianca's eyes narrowed, then widened like those of a cat about to spring. Then she was coming at me over the table, faster than a breath, her arms extended toward my throat. I toppled over backwards in my chair. Even though I'd started to move first, it wasn't enough to get away from her reaching nails in time. One grazed my throat with a hot sensation of pain, and she kept coming, following me down to the floor, those rich lips drawn back from sharp fangs. I jerked my hand out of my pocket and flapped open my white hanky at her, releasing the image of sunlight I'd been storing for use in potions. It lit up the room for a moment, brilliant. The light smashed into Bianca, hurled her back across the old table into one of the shelves, and tore pieces of flesh from her, like bits of rotten meat being peeled off a carcass by a sandblaster. She screamed, and the flesh around her mouth sloughed and peeled away like a snake's scales.